Welcome to the podcast. We are really excited to be here this week as we talk about one of the best reviewed films of 2017 so far, Hugh Jackman's Logan. We're so thrilled to have Peter Adorian and comic guru Arnaldo Reyes back. We talk about purpose, aging, and yes, Arnaldo's love for Hugh Jackman. Let's dive right in. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to the podcast. We are very excited this week to talk about James Mangold's Logan, the swan song sniff tear shed for Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And for a film like this, of course, we had to get our comic book guru, Arnaldo Reyes. Welcome, Arnaldo.
Thank you for having me. Finally, Wolverine has made it to the big screen.
And up against our comic book guru is a lawyer. Welcome back to Peter Adorian. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. I would like to point out that I do live a few blocks over from Logan Avenue in Toronto, and that's kind of a big deal for this podcast.
Arnaldo might even say that that's about as much qualification as Hugh Jackman has to play Logan, but we'll get to that.
Possibly, yeah.
This week we are talking about, as I said, James Mangold's Logan. It is the supposedly and assuredly final presentation of Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine on screen. The film takes place in the year 2029, where most of the mutants have either died or disappeared into hiding. No new mutants have been on the horizon. We find when we first meet Logan, he's living in a silo in the middle of the desert with Professor Xavier and Caliban. And when a young girl appears in their lives, they are forced to go on the run to try and reach the mysterious Eden in North Dakota. But before we talk about the film itself, just a reminder that, yes, this will contain spoilers. So if that's a concern of yours and you want to see the film first, please remember that. But come back, and we are going to talk about Logan. So, let's get right into it. Logan, what did you think?
I really enjoyed the film. I tend to go into a comic book film thinking I can only compare it to other comic book films. Same with going into a Star Wars film. Like, I don't think of Star Wars films based on other films. I just think of them in terms of how good they are based, you know, against the other Star Wars films. And same with the Marvel Universe. But this film was different in that it actually felt like a real movie with real things to say and not just a popcorn flick featuring, you know, all those characters I loved from comic books. And so that was very refreshing to me. And I had, you know, I watched one trailer before going into this and read nothing about it intentionally because I kind of wanted to be surprised a little bit. So that was sort of my initial take and how I went in, and I really enjoyed it. I thought there was a lot being communicated, which I guess is what we're going to dig into now. But in particular, just to start off, one thing is there was a lot of religion in this film, which came up in kind of all over the place in different ways, sometimes subtle, sometimes overt. And I'm sure we'll dig deeper into that. But before we do that, I'd like to hear what Arnaldo thought about it.
Alrighty, so everyone knows I'm not a Hugh Jackman fan. No, I can't say I'm not a Hugh Jackman fan. I'm not a fan of his Wolverine portrayal. I'm a huge Wolverine fan. He's him and Batman rank as top of my favorite superheroes. So, 17 years, I just haven't seen the real Wolverine on screen, the one that pops out of the comics. Going into this film, I was both excited but cautious because I've been burned before. And I was excited more because my second favorite Wolverine was going to be in the film, and that's X-23. So the minute I saw her in the trailers and found out she was going to be in it, I was excited. Then I found out it was a unknown actress, young girl. I put my cautions up. Said in my review, I can wholeheartedly say that I enjoyed the film. I finally got my real Wolverine on film. I got both of them on film. and it was just amazingly done. The pacing was good. The cinematography was well done. And it didn't, like you were saying, Peter, it didn't feel like a superhero film or a comic book film. It felt like an old dystopian Western with just heavy themes in it and a story to tell that was deeper. I would say that this film ranks up there with The Dark Knight as all-time best comic book character film ever made. Mm-hmm. And saying a lot.
Yeah, I would strongly agree with that. And even then, even saying that, I feel like The Dark Knight still feels like a very comic book type of movie. I mean, it's still one of the best the best probably I've ever seen, but that one still feels very superhero-ish, yeah. Whereas this one was very detached from the superhero aspect. I don't know if I can put my finger on exactly why that is. Maybe because what they do that's heroic is such a small part of the film, and really, they're, you know, Wolverine is battling against himself and kind of, you know, seems like a jerk for the first part of the film too, right? I can't put my finger on exactly what makes it not so much a superhero movie, but man, did it ever just feel like there was so much more going on than just the superhero tropes?
You know, I find it difficult to say that it is even a comic book film in a lot of ways. They reference comic books, they're using comic book characters. I feel like Dark Knight is the best comic book film you're ever going to get. I think the differences between them are based on a couple of things. So, for example, in The Dark Knight, they rely heavily still on costumes and maniacal villains. The villains in this piece are almost inconsequential. They're not really important to the story. They sort of drive the narrative, but they're not really things that you look for. When you look at, like, Heath Ledger's Joker, when he's not on screen, you actually kind of wish he was. And, you know, it's still very much about villains doing crazy things and spectacular things. This film doesn't have those tropes. There's no costumes. I mean, obviously there's some costumes and makeup, but... They are unremarkable. They teased in the last Wolverine film. Was it the last Wolverine film or Days of Future Past? They teased the yellow costume. And the most yellow costume you get in this is a kid's toy that he's holding at the end of the film.
Yeah.
So the superhero tropes of the end of the world, of the force that needs to be defeated, they're simply not in this one. In fact, I think I agree with you, Arnaldo. It's far closer to a dystopian Western than it is to anything else. And they make a point of emulating Shane. Forget the X-Men universe. Of all the comic book films, I would even suggest that this is the closest to not being one.
And it's in a field on its own when it comes to the genre. And it's just the use of the characters. And ultimately, it's what I like about it, because when I look at Wolverine, he's not your typical superhero. He's so multi-layered and this broken animal that is fighting with redemption and his animal side, his bad things, the horrible things he's done. He's a killer. He's a hero. He's everything from both sides of the table. So he's, you know, it makes sense that this film isn't your typical superhero film or comic book film, and that it stands out on its own.
Now, in light of that, I almost want to backtrack here for a minute, Arnaldo, because you said that for the first time in 17 years, you saw the Wolverine you wanted to see on screen. And I want to know what you mean. We tease you all the time behind the scenes of you and Hugh Jackman and Wolverine. And I want to know what that means to you and what is the real Wolverine.
In previous installments, especially in his solo film, I feel that the focus was more on the hero side and they never touched or focused on his broken side. And this film finally touched on that. Obviously, my biggest hate is X-Men Origins Wolverine. Everyone hates that film.
You don't even have to be a Wolverine or comic book fan to hate that movie. It's terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the worst, to me, the worst part of that film is the fact that he volunteered for his adamantium bones. And I go, that's not the character. You know, the character is the guy that was kidnapped, abused, held against his will, and that forced into him with barely any anesthesia, and then using him as a weapon, which was the very brief moment that he had in X-Men Apocalypse, where you see him come out and he has that Weapon X garb on. I'm like, that's what he is. He's this character that, you know, has been through a lot. And, you know, what I liked about this film is that you see his brokenness. You see that he's been through, you know, basically hell and back. And when the time calls for it, you know, he acts heroic, but really he just wants to be alone. But he can't be alone because he has this connection with Charles, and that's what it is in the comics. Like, Charles became the father figure that he never had. And in this film, they really captured that well. I feel that in every iteration before this, those sides weren't covered. And finally, I see that. I see the man. I see the broken man who seeks redemption and finds it.
Talking about that relationship with Patrick Stewart as well, I'll be honest. You know, I've heard reviews saying, you know, potential Oscars and all this stuff already. I have heard those things. They're ridiculous. Everybody should forget that right now. First of all, it's too early. Second of all, it ultimately will come down to the fact it's a comic book film. Sorry, people. Not going to happen. But if there were one aspect of the film that I would say that you could talk about that, it would be Patrick Stewart's portrayal of Professor X. That performance was so subtle and did not strive to be over the top in such a way that I was blown away by that. And the relationship was so fascinating. You talk about him being broken. Why don't we talk about them being old?
That was something that really stood out to me as well. I mean, I don't know if the Oscars panel considers this, but part of it was just seeing how different he played this character in this film as opposed to how he played Professor Xavier in the previous films. He's actually having to reconsider what Professor Xavier would be like so many years in the future with physical and mental ailments that were just not a part of the character at all. Before, one of Professor X's defining features is that he's in a wheelchair, right?
Mm.
And that's like the only bad thing that really keeps him from fully exploring his potential as his mutant abilities, right? Now it's like the fact that he's in a wheelchair makes it difficult for him to leave, but it's also easier for Caliban and Logan to keep him contained, right? It just takes on a whole new dimension.
Yeah.
And he really applied that kind of seamlessly, I thought. Slightly different aspect of this is that, you know, when I was watching it, I kind of felt like I was watching one of my own family members who I had known as a more, you know, younger, robust years, and now they're older and yes, kind of ailing. You kind of have that connection with the character, not just from the comics, but from the previous movies. And so it's impressive to see it done really well. And you're right. It wasn't hammed up. It wasn't over the top. There was no cheesiness to it. Even the scene where, you know, he says, "I have to go to the bathroom."
Yeah.
It was a nice moment. It wasn't a cheesy, silly moment. It was actually quite, like, nice. And then when he starts yelling at him when they're in the bathroom, right, when they're in the washroom, like, "I can do it on my own." Like,
yeah.
If anybody's ever dealt with an aging parent or grandparent, like, you've been there, you've seen that. It's not always just kind of funny or cute. Sometimes it's, you know, it can be very, like, loud. I really loved how they showed that in its full force, right? And that way, once you get to the scenes when they reach that family's house in Wyoming, when you see that, you're able to appreciate all the things that they've gone through because of Xavier's condition.
Have either of you seen Downey Jr.'s The Judge? In some ways, their relationship reminded me a great deal of his relationship with Robert Duvall in that film.
Huh, that's interesting.
That was a comparison, especially in the bathroom scene, because there's actually a similar bathroom scene in that film in some ways. You know, it was interesting because comparing the two, they're an interesting dichotomy. And I think you hit it on the head about seeing just a parent or a relative that you've known to be young and robust to hit that phase. But the interesting comparison I saw is that you had Professor Xavier, who believed that he could do something but was unable to, contrasted with Logan, who believed he was unable to do something but could. And the relationship between the two of them was so real, that it was so human, that it was almost terrifying on screen. Not terrifying in the sense of it's scary, but terrifying's not the word. Believable.
I agree. I think that the relationship was, it carried the overall theme of the movie to me. And, you know, as a person or a husband, my wife goes through that with her mother. So it's something that I can relate, in the sense of I know what the pressure is, you know, on the person, on the caregiver. I see it in my father-in-law. I see it in my wife having to do that. And it's not an easy job. And then when you put together what their journey that they've been through, which I'll expand later because there's parts of that I felt needed more. But you can see that in Professor X and Charles, he knew that his time was short. Hmm. And he knew that Logan was also dying, and he didn't want to admit it. But Charles was okay with, when my time comes, my time comes. But he still wanted to impart in Logan the don't give up. Hmm. Like, you want this more than I do. I'm resolved to the fact that I'm an old man and it's going to happen. But you just want it to happen. You just want to let go. The only reason you haven't is because I'm here. Hmm. And is that, and I'm not going to go anywhere until you come to the conclusion that you don't have to go. Hmm. And I think that was the important thing of Charles communicating with Laura, because I'm pretty sure he knew in his communication when he somehow contacted her that who she was, what it was all about, and that's why he would fight Logan even more on. I do have to say the only parts I didn't like was the very few times where he dropped some F-bombs. Felt that was kind of out of character for Charles Xavier. But overall, like, that the impact you really saw, even though they just said it for the family in Wyoming when they met them. He just said, yeah, that's my dad. We know he's not, but at the same time, you're like, well, yeah, he is. Like, he may not be your blood father, but he really is your father. Mm. And really are his son, and you guys carried that dynamic, and they showed that in the film so great.
You know, I want to address the F-bomb issue there when you're talking about Xavier. I think you're absolutely right that it's out of character for him. And I think that was the point. Because I think what you had there was an Xavier who was coming in and out of who he was. And again, going back to that age issue. And when you have a parent who's struggling with dementia, they often will blurt out things they would have never said. And Xavier seemed to be struggling with some form of that. I would argue that it's absolutely out of character, but I think that was the point.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say the same thing. It's common to hear people with dementia do things and say things that are out of character. And that's another one of the aspects, I think, that just kind of gives him that fully formed character of this old, really tired and I guess even mentally exhausted maybe character, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas before he was able, right? Mm-hmm. Now he's not able. He can't even be himself properly. Mm-hmm. Like that's the amount of mental exhaustion that he's gone through. And yeah, it is out of character, but it, strangely enough, it fits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Since we're talking about these happy subjects, let's talk about death. The look of death in this film is unlike anything I've seen in a superhero film. Usually the threat of death is only to the point where the hero is trying to escape it and, you know, try and save the world. This is almost a film where the hero is running headlong into it. How do you think that affects the way we understand superheroes? Should we stop complaining that our heroes never die, or should we start worrying that all our heroes are going to die? And how does this affect hero films moving forward, or does it?
I think it has to affect hero films going forward. Anytime you have a film where all the main characters die, I mean, everybody except for X-23 died in this one, right?
Yeah, pretty well.
It's pretty serious. I mean, it's also, you could argue that they have the opportunity to do that in Logan, because Hugh Jackman says he's not going to play Wolverine anymore. Patrick Stewart is pretty advanced in years and, you know, may not even have the opportunity to play Professor X anymore. You might say that they had the opportunity to do this film where they could go all out and have the characters die. But I think there's more than that. I think they said, we're going to make this bold film and put, you know, kill off our money makers and not bring them back. And I think what that's going to do is it's going to give all of the audience an expectation that, hey, this could happen again. And if I know that if it's not going to happen, if I know that the superhero isn't going to die, I'm going to be more disappointed than I was before. I think that this is going to push the envelope. I like that it's going to push the envelope, but yeah, psychologically speaking, to see my heroes die doesn't feel good, particularly when Professor X, when you find out that he's dead and he's not coming back.
Hmm.
That actually affected me more than seeing Wolverine die.
Hmm.
Professor X seemed immortal in a different kind of way. Wolverine, live by the sword, die by the sword. I think you could reasonably foresee a situation in which Wolverine would die in battle and go down gloriously. But Professor X, the way he died too,
yeah,
was devastating. Like, it was almost an accident. It doesn't mean any less for somebody to die by accident. I think it could actually mean more when you're talking about a story where you're talking about the frailty of life and about how fragile our understanding of who we are is when we're faced with a physical or, health issue, right?
Hmm.
In this, like, Professor X is going through all these health problems, and then he's killed in what is really like a sneak attack, right?
Hmm.
That threw me for a loop. It was as close to an accidental death of a major character that I'd ever seen. I don't know. What do you guys think of that?
Hmm.
I agree. When Professor X's death scene came, I didn't see that coming. But I agreed with how this changes the game in a bit, and I'll go back to the comics, because over the recent years, especially on the Marvel side, we've seen other heroes take up mantles of our favorite heroes. And a lot of time it's viewed with negativity. A lot of people, it's just because you're pushing this agenda or that agenda. Sometimes, yeah. But I think what this film does, and what we haven't even touched on yet, is X-23.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what this does is it allows the passing of the mantle. Now you introduced her in a very good way, I felt. And then you have the killing off of these heroes, but then you look into the horizon, and there's more. This story doesn't end with just Logan's death. Professor X's legacy and his legacy have someone to be carried on with. So we look, we kind of tend to have our superheroes kind of like the disciples had with Jesus. I mean, Jesus was constantly telling them he was going to die, and they didn't believe it. And then when it happened, it was just like, wait, what?
Mm, yeah.
You're supposed to be here forever. And I agree with you, Peter, in that I don't want to see Captain America die we're just kidding. But I think for, you know, superheroes, instead of just going full on back and rebooting, being able to willing to say, okay, let's say bye to these characters and let someone else take the mantle, whether it's with that same name or whether it's going to be a Captain Marvel or a Black Panther to take that lead or Spider-Man to take that lead, you know, in a new generation of heroes. I think this film gives us that opportunity because I left the film and whenever it's up, you know, I have my editorial of making my case for an X-23 solo film. I left the film both sad that I finally got to see Wolverine on the film and now he's gone, but then also excited because, hey, all new Wolverine. I saw her in the film and I want to see more of her. And I think when we looked at death, it's kind of like, you know, especially us as Christians, we know that death isn't the end. It's just, really, it's the beginning. It's the end of this life, but there's more to come. And I think this film, that transition and that scene of just, you know, him and her, and then when she flips that the crossover for the X, I was like right there, you know, the future is right there.
You know, I like what you guys are saying. I want to say a couple of things. First of all, I think you may be overly optimistic on this being a game changer, Peter, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think, quite frankly, that most of the other studio films have the stones to put this sort of weight in terms of thematic depth or death. I think the closest you're going to get is maybe Avengers Infinity War, and I think they're still going for popcorn. I think that's the tone they're going to go for.
I guess to clarify what I said, I don't think it's gonna end the popcorn movie. I think it's going to be a game changer in the same way that Deadpool was.
Right. Yes.
Where like we can't go back now.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. That I agree with. I do like what you guys said about continuing the legacy in some ways because, you know, I have to admit. The scene that I felt the most emotional about, I'm not going to lie, is the scene where Laura is on the ride in the gas station. Laura's on the ride in the gas station, and Hugh Jackman comes up. She's about to, you know, stab the machine, and he stops her, and he says, "Last ride." And he puts a quarter in, and he goes, "You're welcome." And it was such an obvious throw to the fans, because the scene has nothing to do with the
movie. What can I say except... You're welcome. I'm stuck in your head.
Why must you do that? No. But no, in all seriousness, it sort of hit me in that moment. And it's so funny because I cannot think of another particular character that I feel like I watched as I grew up. And I'm not talking about like people playing the same character, because you could make that argument about Luke coming back in episode 7 after a 30-year layoff, you know, that sort of thing. But here you have an actor who literally grew up on the screen with me. You know, he's older than me for sure, probably about 10 or 15 years. I'm not exactly sure how old he is. You know, every time there was an X-Men film, we knew that Hugh Jackman was going to be in it. And so to see Hugh Jackman say, "I'm done with this," was actually sort of, it was emotional for me, because like we see them recasting roles all the time. Doctor Who, he dies and he regenerates. Batman has, my gosh, now he's Lego. you know, you name it. The closest I would say would be Robert Downey Jr. to Iron Man. And I know whether or not you like his portrayal of Wolverine, you can't deny that for the last nearly 20 years, he's been Wolverine. You can deny that. I know Arnaldo would probably deny that he's the right Wolverine, but in pop culture, he's Wolverine.
Yeah.
Go with me on this. But what they've done with Laura now is so interesting, because in her case, they don't have to recast Logan at all. They can continue on a story without the burden of throwing somebody else into the shoes of somebody who's made a character iconic, at least in a film scene. And they can recast it with another character that they've passed the torch to really, really well and explore their side of it without losing any of the momentum. Somebody asked me, they said, "Well, who do you think they'd recast?" I said, "Whoever they cast is going to be a mistake." because that person is going to do basically one film and be the George Lazenby of the X-Men franchise.
Like every Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you look at the criticism of Andrew Garfield, and Garfield got two films. But the truth is, he was following a guy who did three films, two of them good, but three films. And yeah, it was so soon after that it was almost unnecessary. You see what I mean? But then the next guy comes in and they're like, oh, everybody loves the new kid. He's great, blah, blah, blah. The person after it's a death roll. So, but
and there's another bonus here too, is that X-23 doesn't need to have an origin film.
You're right.
Because she already has an origin film. It's called Logan.
Yep.
So all you need to do is just start telling X-23 stories, and everybody already knows who she is. Like,
yeah,
I've always had this beef with comic book movies. Like, I liked the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I thought it was great, but you know, I didn't really want to know the story of how they got together. I just wanted to see a story about these characters. Mm. And like a lot of the comic book films, whenever they're introducing them to the screen, it's always like, here we go. Here's how they got together. Here's the backstories of all the important people you need to know. And then here's some bad guy they fight and die. Like, yeah. There's no real, like, exciting story.
Yeah.
Here, they have already had that origin story. They can go right into the next thing.
I liked the fact that, Arnaldo, you said that in many ways she is his continuation. You know, she is his eternal life in some ways in the film world. Because
yeah, she's Wolverine.
Yeah. Yeah, she is the new Wolverine, and you buy it. You're not trying to recast, you're just trying to continue to tell a story. And it's an incredible, incredible trope. I mean, oh my gosh.
Like, it's not just the female version of the male character. It's actually a completely different person. And you know that, like, you don't feel like you're seeing, there are so many bad ones, but like She-Hulk is maybe one of the worst named ones. I mean, She-Hulk comics are great, but She-Hulk is just the worst name. I'll throw this back to you, Arnaldo. Is it different than like Young Avengers, where you've got a whole, or like you know, Teen Titans, or I don't know, any one of these like young next generation group of heroes kind of stories? Is it different, or is it, you know, is it going to fall into the same mold as, hey, I'm like the big version of me, but I'm the small version?
If they do a film once they're correct, it won't. There's certain things I didn't like, but a lot of it was that she had the same characteristics of Wolverine, where, you know, she had to find her place in the world, in a world that now she's broken free from those who were using her and abusing her, finding herself in that world with minimal guidance from the person that knew her best. And, it's why I fell in love with the character in the comics, because she was everything Logan was, but at the same time she wasn't. And the way he was a father to her was, you know, where all the other X-Men are running to figure out what emotion are running. He's like, no, let her figure it out, because he knows. I'll even say she has no emotions. Like, we see it in this film. When they come after her, which was one of my favorite parts, I had the same reaction as Logan when he first saw her in action. When she comes out and she just attacks the Reavers and goes berserk, you know. But I think what was pictured the best was her reaction to seeing Charles dead. She's still in that handcuff thing, and she just wanted a rage. She wanted to just kill someone, you know. And her reaction to Logan when he's like, "I'm not gonna take you there," and she just continues to punch him and punch him and punch him. And then seeing her cry at the end, she's learning all these emotions right now, because, you know, she was in a facility where she didn't have the luxury to learn that. Those are things that you can expand on. Is It's a story of her finding her purpose, finding her place in the world, and not just being part of the team. She's never been good as part of the team, and I think that's why her new series as Wolverine works so well, because she, as part of a team, okay, but she's so much better as a solo act. One of the moments I liked was after they shaved Logan's beard and had fun with it, that moment in the house, just her and him, where she says, "You have nightmares." And he's like, "Yeah." And she goes, "I have nightmares too. People hurt me." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "I hurt people." Like trying to say, "Well, my nightmares are different. It's because I kill people." And she's like, "Well, I hurt people too. They were bad people." And then he tells her she has to live with that. But that one thing, "People hurt me," is something that you can expand on. There's so much story to tell that you don't have to put her in a thing, and you can just continue unraveling her different layers. I think there's just an opportunity to go to the dark places that, you know, the Wolverine films didn't go to until now. And I think you can continue that with her.
Well, first of all, Arnaldo, I think you should realize that Canada is always a safe zone. Hashtag Trump's America. And
I was just going to say, I mean, there's this, it was so well timed that, you know, the story moves from Mexico through the U.S. up to Canada. It's like, yes, this is where you should all be coming. The person that they were on the phone with was actually Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He's saying, yeah, we take everybody here. Don't worry.
We got
lots of people ready to sponsor Young Mutants who are fleeing from danger. That's in right. The U.S. So
one of the quotes that really struck me about the film is when Charles Xavier says to Logan, "You honestly derive no sense of purpose from what we're doing." What does purpose look like, and what does it look like in this film? What do you think?
If I knew the answer to the first one, I don't know. I don't know what I'd be doing with my time, but probably not this. In the film, though,
this will be Peter's last appearance on the film. No, kidding.
I knew that was going to happen. I knew it. In the film, there's a few different places where purpose really rears its head. The first one is, and obviously they're going on this mission. It's a road trip film. We have to get from A to B, and there's a reason for that.
Hmm.
But the reason that Professor Xavier is doing it is very different than the reason that Logan is doing it for. And what it appears like at the beginning is Logan's just doing it by nature. He's like, "Oh, here's a problem. Somebody's after us, trying to kill us. We got to relocate. I got to fight. I got to fight my way out of this. I got to get to the next place." Like, not really thinking about it in philosophical terms about what he's doing, right?
Hmm.
Xavier is taking, I think, a more academic approach and saying, well, maybe not academic, but certainly more principled approach, saying, "Hey, like, don't you realize that these mutants like you and me no longer exist, and how special this is that we found somebody who is like this, and there are others like this? Like, we need to help these people and keep them together. And, oh, also, she's your daughter," right? Like, there's all these reasons why you should do this, Logan. And Logan's doing them for none of those reasons. It's almost like he's going purely by instinct. And this is how his whole life has been, just surviving from one catastrophe to the next. I questioned whether it was necessary for Laura to be Logan's daughter, and whether that needed to be there in the film at all. And I said it was unnecessary, and that the film would have been just the same, no better and no worse, had she not been his daughter. But I think Arnaldo probably disagrees with me.
Yeah, because I think the overall theme of the film and the purpose of the film was to remind Logan of what he found in the X-Men, and what he found was a purpose, and what he found was family. And I think that's when Xavier brings that up to him, it's because Xavier understands that Logan is just trying to get away, you know, get rid of this girl and continue on his survival or his, you know, one-way ticket to death. I'm going to take you, Charles, on a boat in the middle of the ocean where you can have your seizures, die, and then I can shoot myself and die, and then it'll all be over. And I think the aspect of Professor X and discovering her, discovering that there's more like her, I think it was, he was thinking of his school all over again.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's more, there's something to be done here. And the reason why he mentions her being his daughter is to bring Logan back to that. To, like, you've gone so far away, let's bring you back and remind you. And I think that's why the moment where they were at that dinner table with the family in Wyoming, you know, where Professor X looks at him, Charles looks at him and says, you know, this is what it's all about, family. Mm-hmm. That was the standing point, because, you know, I go back to that end scene where, you know, finally Laura's talking and she's cutting the tree that he's impaled on up, and, you know, and crying. And then all of a sudden she just says, Daddy, you know, and I think that's where it came full circle, because, you know, Logan needed to rediscover family, but Laura needed to discover what family actually was. Mm-hmm. It's something she didn't know, and it's something that the other kids don't know. Mm. And she got a brief moment of what it was, thanks to Charles. She found out more about Logan, was not just because of the comic books. Those in the beginning where Logan's like, you're talking to her, and you know him and her are talking telepathically, even though you don't know what they're talking about. I think they were talking about him. And she even said, like, you know, Charles told me you're dying. And he goes, oh, yeah, what else he tell you? She goes, not to let you.
Right.
Now, so I go back to when we were talking about death. Charles knew that his time was short, but he knew that she needed him, and more importantly, Logan needed her.
I guess what I'm questioning specifically is why she was his biological daughter. Throughout the X-Men comics, you have people like Sabretooth, for instance, you know, who was part of the same program that created Wolverine, saying, like, we're brothers, we should be together, we should be, you know, you should be like me, right? There is this statement of we're family. And then it's, you know, sometimes it's tempting for Wolverine to go with him and do these kind of things. But then he remembers, no, my real family is with the X-Men. But even when he's with the X-Men, there's this question of whether he's even really a mutant like they are. Because his abilities are not natural. They're manufactured in a way, right? And throughout the X-Men series, it came up a bit in the 90s cartoon, and it came up in a number of the comics I've read, where there's a question of how much of a mutant he really is. He's got the healing factor, but the adamantium that's in him, you know, was not by natural selection. It was there by, you know, the horrible experiments. And so he doesn't really fit in with them either. And yet he still considers them to be more family than, say, Sabretooth or Deadpool, for that matter. But that's kind of where I was going at this with, why does she have to be the biological daughter? It doesn't seem, I mean, hey, you guys have kids and I don't, so maybe you guys have a better explanation for this than I do. But
I don't think it was
I'll throw it back to you. I don't know.
No, I just go back to the whole idea of, you know, him remembering, you know, what family is about. I think it brings him back to Earth. One of the characteristics I love about Wolverine, especially in the comics, is that, you know, he was a father figure to a lot of the younger mutants. So he's always had that characteristic. And that's why I've always liked the dynamic of X-23 in the comics. She's a lab baby made from his DNA, but all in all, she brings him out of that broken state and reminds him what's important in life. And I think as parents, you know, our kids sometimes does that to us. I know my daughter does that to me all the time. You know, that's the purpose she serves for him and being his daughter.
Yeah, and I would say it's not necessarily a massive plot point, but I would also say it probably puts an automatic burden on him that a random kid that has the same abilities might not, or as quickly. But, you know, going back to this idea of purpose, it was interesting to me that Xavier maintains, even in the midst of his condition, he continues to see things or see that purpose is bigger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And someone like Logan has been beaten down and broken by so much. And that is so evidenced in this film. The burden is on him like nobody's business. And yet everybody has these expectations they're thrown at him as well. People know of him because they've read the comic books. And when she's got the comics, he throws them at her and says, "This is ice cream for bedwetters." you know, he says that these stories are based on fact, but they've got them all wrong. And he's sort of living under the weight of this burden of the deaths of the people that are lying in their wake, in their history, how many people have been killed. And it's the heaviest of burdens, so much so that he can't seem to see any sense of purpose when the film starts. I would even argue that it's until the last 20 minutes of the film he doesn't see that. It's fascinating that he is literally – you hit it on the head when you said he's lived by instinct. And here he is, broken emotionally. He believes he has nothing left to offer. And this sense of purpose seems to be gone. I don't even think he has that great sense of purpose with her throughout the film, because he says that bad things happen to people I care about. And she says, "Well, then I'll be fine." Like, he's deliberately kept her at a distance. It's like he's thrown himself into the pit and just said, "Look, there is nothing else that I can believe in." Yet all these people believe in him. You know, they believe that he is this thing. All these stories, he says, "Those aren't me. Those aren't me. I'm not the guy in the yellow suit. I'm not the guy who did these things," because these stories are wrong. Or his sense of purpose is so lost at that point. But it's because he's become so insular and he's focusing entirely on that brokenness that he refuses to see anything external or anything bigger than himself. Now, by the end, I think that comes through. Here's a question for you. By the end of the film, is Logan redeemed?
I think he is. I think at the end of the film, his actions, his sacrifice, and again, I just go back to that moment of him and her, and when he tells her, "Don't be what they created you to be." I think at that moment is, you know, his redemption is full circle. In my life, I had a choice to continue being the killer that I thought I was created to be. I had a choice to remain mopey and believe that I am a curse. But in the end, I chose differently in all those aspects. And I think that's where his redemption comes, is that he's able to just impart that last thing. I think as a dad, if there's anything I want to impart on my daughter, I'm gonna fail her so many different times, you know, in my life, is just letting her know you are not what other people tell you you are. You are who you are, and that's all you have to be. To me, that's where his redemption came.
His battle with the X-24 is symbolic of his battle against his old self.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Keep going.
That's all I really had to say. he destroys that old self.
But he doesn't. Ronaldo,
I thought it was a little strange when I saw it at first.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, Wolverine fighting Wolverine. Yeah, cool. But like, this doesn't really fit with the rest of the story until you kind of, I think one of the ways that I made it fit, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but yeah, the whole, he's fighting himself. When you see the carnage at the beginning of the movie, when he fights those guys outside of the vehicle, like that was like really violent. It was actually the most violent thing in the whole film.
Hmm.
where you see his claws go through a guy's skull. Like, that was real graphic. Mm. When he's fighting this ruthless image of himself, even at the farm, he only goes as far as being able to pin him down, right? Or I guess it's the father at the farm pins him against the wall with the car.
Mm.
And it's like, at that point, he could only pin him down. He couldn't quite fully finish the job. That's as far as he got. But they, you know, they unpinned him and they put him back together. It's like kicking a habit, like alcoholism or drug abuse. You pin it down, you don't do it anymore. But then it's like, look, you know, the same, with the same ability that they had to heal X-24. And like, you see that he just comes back, you know, they have to recreate a whole part of his face, right? And with the drug, and the drug does that, and they're like, ha, we made you ruthless again just by injecting this into you, right? We made you wholly evil again with this drug, and it just happens. But he was pinned for a bit. At the end, he's finally destroyed, right?
Both those instances, it reminds us that fighting ourselves, fighting that inner self of ours, we don't have to do it alone. In both those instances, he was saved by someone else. And yeah. I think when we look at that, you know, that's a perfect parallel of our own daily battles. We have someone to lean on in Jesus.
There, I read a couple of really good articles. There was a really good one by Wade Bearden in Christianity Today. And then there was this one at the AV Club by Vishnevetsky. I'm going to pronounce that wrong. And one of the things that they talked about, both of them, especially in the AV Club, is that throughout the film, it feels like the cross motif is following him. And that's not to over-spiritualize it, because even though, yes, you could argue that Logan gives his life to save the children, and even dies on a tree, he's not a Christ figure. He's not. In fact, I would say he's a broken disciple. But all along the way, there seem to be these little moments of grace or this religious motif that seems to follow him along, including that dinner scene at the Munsons. And it is a fascinating moment where here in this place, he finds this grace that helps him sort of rediscover a lost part of himself. The real healing isn't his healing power. It's a sense of healing throughout his spirit. I did think it was interesting at the end of the film that as they buried him, they put the cross on top. And of course, she tilts it so that it's an X. But when I saw that, the first thing that I thought of was the picture of Jesus carrying the cross as he approached his Golgotha. And this the weight and the burden on this broken body as well. And yes, it's certainly an X-Men throw, but it's a fascinating look that along the way, all along his journey, in the midst of his despair and self-focus, Logan seems to have this godlike spirit watching over him, or at least following him. There's a fascinating little breakdown in that article in the AV Club on how in his moment with the Munsons, there is a cross on the shelf behind him, and it's still in the dark. It's not focused on, it's just there. Didn't need to be, but it was. It seems to be over his shoulder a lot, and it's just around him. So there is this religious motif, and it even ends on the Johnny Cash song, The Man Comes Around. Yeah, it's such a fascinating film from that context, and that's not to over-spiritualize it, but it certainly is there. I mean, for crying out loud, where the kids run to is called Eden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in this dry, desolate wasteland, they find this place of flourishing, and they are trying to get there so that they can be safe. Even the fact that – I love the fact that they get it from the comic book, and there's this question of it's not real. Yes, it is real.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to get there. That's where we go. And it is real, but it's not what they expected it to be. Like, it's so much imagery within the piece. You know,
Professor Xavier says to Logan that it's real to her, maybe insinuating that hope is more important than whether it's real or not, but in other ways maybe saying to Logan, hey, it's real to her, and she's what matters to you.
Hmm.
And so that should matter to you that it's real to her, right? Like, it was a sweet moment, I thought, when they're talking about it and she's naming all the names of the people who are there. And he's like, no, these are the names of the people who wrote and drew this comic book.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fantastic. I don't know if I'm with you guys all the way on how much redemption he experienced. I think he learned something, but I don't know that he was completely changed. I'll go that far, but I don't think I can go much further. I mean, I don't think he unlocked any mysteries to life. It almost seemed like he learned a very ordinary lesson, and that was actually more fitting than him learning it, you know, the deepest truth of life, right? There was just something nice to how he learned a lesson that's a very normal lesson, but for him it was an extraordinary lesson because his life had not had any normalcy to it.
Mm.
You know, family is important. Sacrificing yourself for others, like those are things that he understood in one way as an X-Man, and he understood it in a completely different way in this movie.
Hear what I was saying, though, Peter, because I wasn't even suggesting this. I think he probably was redeemed at the end. In fact, I would suggest he is, but I don't think it's the grand transformation that in many ways might have lessened the impact of the moment. But I do think that there was a grace and a care that followed him throughout his journey, almost a pilgrim's progress sort of thing, except I hesitate to use that because it's a terrible analogy here, but you've got the broken disciple that has a hand upon him. And yes, in some ways it's an ordinary lesson. I agree with you on that. I don't think there was this, oh, I understand. If anything, the only person that says, I understand what you're going through, it's Charles about Logan.
Yes.
But Logan doesn't seem to be there. But by the end of the film, I would suggest that there is somewhat of a sense of relief and arguably a peace that he doesn't have the rest of the film. Even if it's only in that moment on the log.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be wrong.
I agree with that.
Having said that, though, that sounds like a good place for us to start to wrap up. Believe me, I think there's a lot more we could say, but I think that that's probably a good place for us to start transitioning out. Let's do Screen It or Skip It. Guys, Logan, Screen It or Skip It?
Definitely a Screen It.
I'm saying definitely, definitely Screen It. It was a pleasure to watch, just to sit back and enjoy. You don't have to think too hard if you don't want to, but if you do like to think about movies, this is a real thinker.
I would absolutely agree with you two. Screen It for sure. Now, having said that, it's R-rated and it earns its R rating, so be aware of it. Or at this point in the podcast, if you haven't, or I just realized we've given like all the spoilers anyway, so hopefully people have seen it at this point. But people should be aware. This is not the Logan of the original X-Men. It's a very different film. But I think that's to its credit. Guys, thank you so much for being on the show. Peter, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, as always.
Thanks again for coming on, Arnaldo.
Oh, thank you for having me, and for anyone out there, if you haven't seen the film, I highly recommend it and suggest you go see it.
And a reminder to all of you at home that you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and now Stitcher. And if you do go to the website, screenfish.net, and go to the podcast page, you can download Fishing for More. Those are small group questions that you can have when you do see the film and dialogue about it with the people that you see it with as well. And Peter, you also wanted to talk about the Pomegranate Film Festival, which you're involved in as well. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
That's right, Steve. I'm on the board of the Pomegranate Film Festival in Toronto. It's a community-based festival that is features films from Armenia, about Armenians, and made by Armenians. The biggest, of course, Armenian director probably ever is the Canadian Anton Egoyan, and his films have, you know, been featured in our festival, and he's at the festival every year. The big thing that we've been showing recently are films about the conflict in Syria. What some people may not realize is Aleppo is a city that had thousands and thousands of Armenians in it, and so it was actually a religiously diverse city lots of Christians living with Muslims in relative harmony for the past 100 years. And a lot of films that we've shown have been about that conflict, as well as a number of comedies and, you know, more fun stuff as well. Mm. So come check it out if you're in Toronto. Our festival is in November, and we have other screenings throughout the year. You can find us at pomegranatefilmfestival.com or just search for Pomegranate Film Festival on Facebook.
Great. Thanks for telling me about that. And before I forget, if you are in the Toronto area, just to let you know that on April 3rd and 4th, there is an organization called Imago that is having a two-day conference on film and spirituality called Opening Frames, and it will take place at the TIFF Bell Lightbox, and it's going to feature Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver and Raging Bull and Affliction. He will be speaking on the transcendental style of film. There's going to be some workshops as well, and it is only $65. If you want to enroll, you can go to the Imago website, look it up online, I-M-A-G-O, or you can register just for the Paul Schrader event on the TIFF website. Look for that. It's going to be exploring post-Christian imagery in film, and after we talked about Logan, that is absolutely perfect. Couple of days, so look for that as well. We will be back in 2 weeks as we talk about Beauty and the Beast, which I assume will be a very similar film in a number of ways. Same plot, so
definitely,
yeah.
The Beast has claws,
and he's being hunted. It's the same one. But for the rest of you, as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
What's his face isn't going to play Wolverine anymore? Why can't they think of
his name? What's his face? Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, the guy from Notting Hill. You know, no wait, that's Hugh Grant. Sorry.
Doc, you know, the house.
Yeah, exactly.